everybody. You are listening to Limited Playtime, the board game podcast where we bring you board game reviews in 30 minutes or less.
Or the next episode is free.
I am Kyle Bolin.
And I'm Jason Cavalieri.
And we are so excited to be here today.
Did you have a stroke in the middle of that?
It's just enthusiasm. It's an enthusiastic stroke.
Well, if you're going to have a stroke, I mean,
enthusiasm stroke. Enthusiastic. That's what it is. Today we are talking about another big one, a biggin.
Biggins, you say?
Yes, it's like Al Bun. No, not like Al Bunny's biggin. Madara. Unintentional Malum. Act One. There is both a colon and a hyphen in this title. Madara colon Unintentional Malum hyphen Act One.
They want to make sure they get their money's worth with the punctuation marks.
Yeah. Madara is a big campaign style. Oh, boy. Campaign doesn't even really address what it is, I think, entirely, given the amount of narrative in this game. But it's a dungeon crawler, essentially. It's a cooperative dungeon crawler that has a massive narrative campaign in it with some branching paths that you get to kind of explore. And it also has a crawl mode of... that Jason and I tried out online using Tabletop Simulator. Madara is designed by Clayton Helm, Brooklyn Lundberg, Brenna Moncur, and Ian Tate. Art is by Stephanie Gustafson, Alex Hansen, Hector Servilla Lujan, Rhett Mason, John Troy Nickel. It is published by Succubus Publishing, who I believe only publishes Madara Unintentional Malum. And this is Act One, so it is the first of three planned acts for Madara as far as the narrative adventure goes. And I believe each one will come with like new enemies and new heroes and such. When you start this game, you have four heroes that you can choose from. I mean, actually, you're going to be playing as all of them. So if you're playing single player or two player, you're going to be controlling, you know, four or two heroes respectively. But, you know, you can play up to four players. And as you play through this game, I believe that it's implied that at some point the heroes that you start with may not be available, and so you may have other heroes come in and sort of become available, and you might be sort of like swapping them in and out and stuff as you play. There's a massive storybook that you can read from yourself if you want to, or there's an app online that you can have the whole thing read to you by a professional voice actress. And yeah, that's pretty cool, I guess. Anyway, my wife and I own this. We started playing it last year, and we've played through a decent chunk. We've gotten out of, like, sort of what I would call, like, the first... I would call it an act, except for the whole thing is called an act. But, you know, like, sort of the first big chunk of story, where we've gotten out of the tutorial, and then sort of out of the first, like, sort of, like, story thread, to get to the point where we're now sort of, like, off in the world on our own as a little party of adventurers, like, stopping in another town where you can, like, sort of gear up and stuff. And why don't we get into how we played and how it plays and all that, Jason? Because I know you tried mechanics, right? Like we did the crawl mode, which is sort of like a truncated version of the game that kind of like gets rid of the heavy narrative, and it just kind of gives you a very light narrative about what you're doing in this dungeon or whatever, like killing these little like skittery bugs or whatever, and gives you enough of a framework to get how the game plays mechanically. Also, you get like just enough to see kind of how the character progression might work and how equipment might work and everything. So why don't we talk about that? Why don't we talk about what you saw, and then I can kind of go in and fill in the gaps as far as what the other stuff that you didn't see might help provide you if you decide that you want to go out and get Madara Unintentional Malum Act One.
Okay, sure. I mean, I think the first thing that really struck me about this game was even before you start playing the game, is the amount of sort of customization that you can get in terms of what your characters will be.
Yeah.
You can choose both like skills, or it's a point buy system, isn't it? Kind of.
Basically, it's like an XP system. They call it XP, where you have, I think it's like five different categories of skills, basically. They call them disciplines, I think, in this game. You know, like one might be like healing and defense, and one might be sort of like, you know, martial skills, and one might be sort of like stealth related skills. And they're all kind of loosey goosey with the theme, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, basically that's kind of what you're describing, right?
Yeah. So I like that, you know, a lot of games start with like, okay, you can buy like, a, I don't know, a piece of gear or something, but this game started with, yeah, you can buy gear, you can get different types of skills. And it seemed like the starting gold or whatever was enough to get a fairly wide variety of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really liked that about it, just right off the bat before we even started playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of the things that I really liked about the game was that the particular scenario that we played was not terribly long, mm-hmm. First of all. It wasn't really difficult to understand what was happening. The goals were very clearly outlined. And there were enough surprises along the way where it felt like it was evolving, but it didn't feel like it was overwhelming.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of times you get into a dungeon crawler and if they want to ramp up the difficulty, they just start throwing everything at you and it gets to a point where, you can't, you know, it feels like you can't possibly do what you need to do. I feel like Zombicide's not exactly a dungeon crawler, but it's kind of like that, you know?
I think a good example is Sword and Sorcery, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Where Sword and Sorcery just kind of, like, throws so much at you early on, like, even from, like, the tutorial missions, and everything's so complex and complicated in that game that you may not understand what you need to do, but also you may just not want to... You may just feel like you don't want to do it at a certain point, where it just feels like a little bit of a slog, a little bit too much overhead, you know? Yeah. I think... I played through the first like three or four missions of the new version of that game, Ancient Chronicles, and there's parts of it that I really like, and there's parts of it that I wish were just simpler or more streamlined or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And it can just feel like a lot, you know.
Yeah. And so, and I appreciated that about this game is that it threw stuff in there to keep making it challenging, but it didn't ever seem like it was insurmountable.
Yeah.
You know, the enemies were, I think, appropriately difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't like outsized or outlandishly powered, overpowered for.
Yeah. I mean, we were going up against pretty early game enemies that aren't very difficult, even relative to other enemies in the game.
Yeah. But I think still they, although that they weren't difficult, they also weren't like a pushover.
Yeah. I mean, it took a little bit of strategy at least to, you know, get through without some, you know, like bruises and bumps and stuff. We did get pretty high on damage with one of our characters, I think, but we didn't really ever get close to like a whole party wipe or anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing that I liked that kept throwing, besides adding more enemies in, that I kept adding, I don't know, a hint of mystery or excitement, were those totem things.
Yeah.
That, like, I mean, some of them, yeah, just added in more enemies, but I think we didn't actually reveal all of them, but
no.
But they were kind of like little objective markers, except when you moved into the line of sight of one, then something new happened.
Yeah, and the map can expand.
Yeah,
it can like
the map, and you know, so there was a sense of exploration, and there was always this kind of like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen if I, you know, activate that totem or whatever.
Yeah,
and that was pretty cool. I kind of like that part of it.
In both the crawl mode that we played and in the narrative, you know, campaigns mode of the game, those totems and other objective markers can be good and bad. They can expand the dungeon in a way that makes it more labyrinthine, where like you might go down a certain path and you know that you may only have enough time to explore one of those paths that's available to you. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes there will be end conditions both ways, right? Where, you know, you might be able to end the level and finish the level, not just like lose the level, I mean, by going down either path, or, you know, like we've played some that I feel like have like, you know, three or four, you know, finish conditions essentially for finishing out the maps different ways. And that might mean that you end with different benefits going into the next mission or something,
right,
you know?
Yeah. I'll tell you what. So, I mean, overall, my impression of the game was pretty positive. There was one thing that I didn't really care for, which was, although I liked the idea of the, I don't know what they call them, the points that you need to spend to do actions.
They call it SP, yeah.
SP. I liked the idea of that, as like your actions are only limited by what you can pay for, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I generally like that in games. The thing that I didn't like, and this may just be because we're playing a really simple scenario or something, I don't know, but it seemed like the only things I ever needed to do were move and fight things.
Yeah, it was because you didn't have any abilities that required the use of the SP.
Right.
You didn't have any abilities that required the use of the SP, and you didn't have any gear or anything that also required the use of the XP. That stuff can be part of the game. That can be part of your character's build. And, you know, like I said, we were part of the way through the game, and I was like, oh, right, like, we haven't been using the SP to boost our attacks, right? Mm-hmm. Which was another thing that we forgot to do. I forgot to explain it, and then, you know, we didn't do... I think I like did it in one of the final combats.
Yeah.
But that was it, right? And so, like, I think that even just that would have made you feel like there was a little bit more decision process to be made mm-hmm. with the use of the SP and how you managed that.
Right.
The other thing that you could use it for that we barely needed it for was dodging and countering. But the mission was so simple that there wasn't very much back and forth with the enemies that we were fighting requiring countering, and we had plenty of gear that had free dodges on it already that we didn't need to expend the SP to dodge, you know, like when damage was incoming. Also, I think you were playing a character that was pretty far back. I think I had two characters that were kind of like leading the charge, tip of the spear sort of thing. So there wasn't
sort of
quite
the way
as much
I play generally. It's just range.
I mean, and that isn't necessarily going to work out in this game. Having played a bunch of it, you can have enemies show up behind you. You know, like, it doesn't know. We were playing a very, like, narrow passage sort of, like, map also. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't always easy for the rear heroes to get up to the front or for the enemies to get to the back of our line of heroes. So I think that particular mission and the way that we were playing it wasn't real conducive to showing you, you know, like what's fun about managing this resource, right?
Right.
So I don't think you saw that, but my experience with it has been that I love it. Like it adds so much more depth to the decisions that you make within it with a game like this than a game like Descent or something, where it's just like you get to move, you get to attack, you know, maybe you get to use a little stamina to, like, you know, activate another thing or something like that. Mm-hmm. But in this one, it's like you're managing this resource that you get so much of every turn, but also you can bank so much of it if you can't use it all up on one turn to, you know, carry it on into the next and then maybe have a really explosive turn next time. Mm-hmm. I love that about this game, and I've always liked those sort of action point type mechanics in video games and board games, so I very much appreciate it here, and I feel like the way that it works when you have sort of a fuller game, right, it works extremely well here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like there's enough here to tantalize me into wanting to see more, to see how a lot of this plays out.
Yeah. This is a dungeon crawler. It's a narrative campaign dungeon crawler, and so it's hard for me to, like, talk about it without, like, thinking about how it compares to other campaign mm-hmm. dungeon crawlers. Sure. And of all the ones that I've played in recent years, of the ones that are very much like move and attack sort of ones, like, you know, where your attacks don't change, because I guess I'm thinking about Gloomhaven, right? Gloomhaven is special because we call it a dungeon crawler, but really it's also sort of like a hand management and a card management game where, you know, like, your character isn't doing the same thing every turn. You are very much doing, like, one of maybe, like, 10 things that you can do, you know, every round or whatever, every turn out of every round, mm-hmm. because each card has a different effect. That is very different from this and from something like Descent or something like Sword and Sorcery, right?
Yeah.
But this game, I feel like, can be compared relatively one-to-one with something like Descent or something like Sword and Sorcery, not so much Gloomhaven. And I feel against those games, against the Descents in the world and all those others that we've talked about a million times, I feel like this is much more dynamic, you know, much more... There's much more depth with how you build your character out and how meaningful that feels when you're playing. And so mechanically, I like this game far more than those other games so far, anyway. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, you know, my wife and I haven't finished the campaign or anything. We're probably like 15 hours into what they call like a 90-hour campaign, maybe 20 or something like that.
Yeah.
But so far, we've really enjoyed that. The thing that the narrative part of the campaign does, though, is it has some extremely long narrative pieces, right? Like storytelling sections. And we've had
a novella with your board game.
Yes, exactly. And there's been nights where I was like, hey, are we gonna play Madara tonight? And my wife's like, yeah, should we set it up? And I'm like, actually, I looked forward and I think maybe we're just gonna have to sit here for a half hour and listen to the radio play. And we have had nights where we literally did that. We just, like, my wife poured a glass of wine, I got myself a coffee, and we put the iPad in between us and we listened to the 30 minutes of radio play that Madara had waiting for us. And I don't know. There's probably some people out there that, that's tantalizing for, but I feel like that's probably a minority is my guess. it's a lot. I mean, like, sometimes it's not always 30 minutes of radio play in between each mission, but it's a lot. And even just like sitting there for like 5 minutes, just listening is a lot for me. So sometimes I feel like the narrative is just too much. It's not like it's poorly done or anything, but there's just so much of it that sometimes I'm just sort of overwhelmed by that. And I just kind of want to get to the dice rolling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which we haven't even talked about how the dice mechanics work, but
I mean, on the other hand, I might appreciate, you know, just sitting back and letting somebody else do the work from, for
sure. It's nice that you don't have to physically read the book, if you don't want to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's just one caveat, right, is that you got to know going into this, because it's a big game, it's a big expensive game, so you should know whether or not you can tolerate long, involved narrative sections for a game that oftentimes, I mean, and this is like comparing it to other narrative-heavy games, like, I think about, like, we also played Legacy of Dragonhold last year, which is like a very choose-your-own-adventure-style game, right, but, and it can have, like, longer narrative pieces, but they're not as long as this, and you're always making choices at the end of them. Sometimes this will just be like, you know, like one 15 minute narrative going into another 5 minute narrative going into another 10 minute narrative where you don't make a single choice, you know, in that entire exchange or whatever. Whereas like in Legacy of Dragonhold, you're constantly making choices, so you constantly feel involved, and you kind of feel constantly like responsible for what's going on story-wise with a game like that, right? That has you making choose your own adventure style choices constantly within the narrative. This one, like, is like, okay, you got through 30 minutes, now you get to make a choice, you know, which way you're gonna go. Okay, cool. But anyway, so I mean, like, kind of know that going in. If this sounds good to you, know that is one of the aspects of this game.
Yeah, I guess I can see how that can be not terribly exciting, especially when one of the draws of board gaming is like being able to make your own choices about what to do with your character, faction, player piece, whatever.
So I mentioned the dice rolling mechanic too. I wrote that there, you roll dice in this game, and I feel like that's another thing that kind of puts it in the same ballpark as a Descent or a Sword and Sorcery. I like the dice better in this game because they work sort of like D&D almost, where instead of just like rolling a hit or not a hit based on, like, you know, the numbers that show up on a Descent dice that tell you like whether or not you had the range and all the other stuff they've got going on. Like, this one has, like, you're comparing scores, right? You're comparing the numbers that you rolled plus any bonuses that you have against somebody's armor and everything. And it just feels more like Dungeons and Dragons to me, the way that it works mechanically. Yeah. But then I also like how the excess attack numbers work into the damage that you're doing as well. So, like, if you roll extremely well, not only is it just, like, you know, a real, you know, solid hit, making sure that you hit, you know, this is going to cause some amount of damage, but it's meaning that you hit harder too, so you're doing more damage than you would have had you just, like, you know, hit by a little bit. So I appreciate that about it too. It still has, like, sort of like the symbology system that a lot of other games have, where, you know, you get two shields on a die side, and so you get to cross-reference that with your character sheets and equipment, and maybe that's going to equate out to some extra damage or some other, you know, special effect, like a stun or something like that. It does that, like a lot of those other games too, but I feel like this one's a little bit more streamlined. I feel like there's a little bit better readability with it, and I feel like, I don't know, like, I just appreciate the way that it works a little better than those. I think maybe because it's a little closer to, you know, the sort of role-playing games that we've played over the years. So
yeah, generally I don't mind dice, although I, as you were kind of mentioning, like, sometimes they do get a little bit arcane or Byzantine with the way that they work and the symbols that they use. And I kind of liked so here's a number and this is your baseline thing, and then you can possibly add in these little symbols that are on the thing, but the main thing is the number.
Yeah, and it has the boost thing where you can spend SP to roll a black die, which is sort of a risk-reward thing, because it's likely going to add a bunch of symbols that might add damage or other effects, but also there's one side of that die that is a skull, and if you do that, then you completely whiff. But that, compared to, I think Descent also had, like, you know, an auto-fail side of a die, at least at some point it did. I think that so does Sword and Sorcery, but they use D10s, so the chance of getting one is lower. But still, the only way you would get an actual auto-fail in this game is if you did the risk-reward method, because if you don't boost, there's no skull. It's only there if you boost to try to make your attack better.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yep. But yeah, and so, like, you know, as you play through the game, you get XP for your characters as you complete missions, or, like, you know, hit milestones or whatever, and you can use that XP to delve into the 5 different disciplines of upgrade trees, and you can, like, kit out these characters however you want. Like, you can make one sort of like a healer if you want, or you can make it a healer bow user, or, you know, like a summoner or whatever. There's all kinds of stuff. I think that what they intended to do, like, the elevator pitch for this game was to try to make it as much like the JRPG computer games and, like, video games, mm-hmm. That we've kind of grown up with as much as possible. I mean, you kind of see that through the anime influence, because the art is very anime. But I think also they were trying to go for that with sort of how you kit out the different characters. And I think that the way that you can kind of customize them is more in line with, like, a Final Fantasy game than what we've seen out of, like, Descent or whatever, where, like, you sit down with a barbarian-looking character and he plays like a barbarian character, right? But
yeah.
with this game, at the beginning of the game, at least in the narrative section, like, they kind of, like, give you sort of, like, a kit for each character, but you can change that when you get out of the tutorial, and you have, like, almost full customization with how the characters play. They yeah. each have, like, their own little perk or whatever, but those perks are so general that you wouldn't say, this one needs to go yeah. to the caster, right?
Yeah, like, that's what I was just going to say about that, is that, yeah, like, they do have, like, the characters have individual abilities, but the abilities don't dictate what kind of class that person is going
right.
to be.
Yeah.
So it is really kind of cool that, you know, I think one of the ones I was playing was like an angel or something. And so her ability was that she could fly, which had movement effects, which was fine. But that didn't, you know, if I wanted to, I could have made her like a flying angel, like warrior bitch that goes, you know, headlong. Although I'd stuck to my normal thing, which is to, you know, to cast spells at people. But
Let me get up in the thick of it and take all the blows.
Right, yeah. But I did appreciate that. Like, the class of these things doesn't really matter. Like, you can make them whatever class you want.
Yeah. You know, so that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to kind of plan your character out, take a look at all these different cards that you can get, all the different gear in the game. There's a ton of gear with all kinds of different effects. And to really just kind of like think about how you want to min-max your character in some way, or make them a generalist in some way or whatever, right? This game really facilitates that in a way that a lot of games don't, and I love that about it.
It's also kind of funny, like the
yeah.
I forget
it
what
has
the,
a good sense of humor.
Yeah, what is the thing that like you eat it and you get health?
I don't remember now.
It's like
but, I mean, there's like a juice box.
Oh,
there's
yeah, the juice box. The
there's
juice box.
There's like stamina. They look like Monster Energy drinks and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah. This game has a very interesting aesthetic. It's very much like high fantasy slash like modern, like modern style, like leather jackets with like, you know, belt buckles on them and stuff, sunglasses. There's guns in the game, so it's very Final Fantasy if you're familiar with that that series.
Yeah.
You know, like it wouldn't be out of place to see like Cloud Strife or something in this game. So that's kind of the aesthetic we're talking about, and that might be to your taste, it might not, but I, you know, like I wasn't crazy about it at first, but it's grown on me quite a bit as I've played, because, you know, it's just, it's a good game and they execute well on the style that they're going for. So I've very much enjoyed it.
Hey man, as long as I don't have to play Blitzball, I'm fine.
Yes. Yeah, I don't need to do that ever again either.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as far as the components go, the actual physical components, it's got this massive thick cardboard box with, you know, like a spiral bound books inside of it. They're really thick. They're awesome. It's got a lot of minis for the actual enemies and the characters that you're going to be playing as. Not the most minis in the world, but they're a pretty decent detail. I know I showed some pictures to you online a while mm-hmm. back, Jason, of how I'd painted them, and they turned out pretty well. You know, like they're maybe not quite as high detail as the minis that we've been getting into
yeah.
lately
yeah.
from Games Workshop, but I mean, still like very high for what we see out of most board games.
Sure.
So
yeah.
it's been a lot of fun, kind of like just interacting with the components as well. And it's got tons of cards, all good quality stuff. The tiles that you build the dungeons out of have like sort of like a gloss finish to them, and like there's sort of like a texture to all of the sort of like terrains on the
oh,
tiles
that's
as well.
Cool.
So yeah, it's really cool. They're really really nice. I have never seen any like terrain tiles quite like this out of a board game.
Yeah.
So I've been enjoying the components of it, which is great because it's a pretty expensive game, I believe. I think when I kickstarted it, it was like 100 or something, but I'm pretty sure it's going for a lot higher than that now on their website, where I believe it may still be available. I'm going to check that right now. Yeah, Madara Act 1 is $160 on the Madara.com website. That's M-I-D-D-A-R-A. Or you can keep your eye out for the next Kickstarter, because I believe eventually they're going to open up their the Kickstarter again, or whatever backing program they're using, backing website, because they are going to do Acts 2 and 3 within the next year or so, I believe. So if this sounds good, check it out. Check out the aesthetic, check out the, you know, like all the components that come with it. Maybe take a look at some other people's comments, because I know it's a big investment, both with time and money. But for me, for my wife and I, it's been great, and I think that we had a pretty good time playing it last week as well, Jason.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to say about Madara?
No, just that I find the subtitle, like, incredibly amusing.
Yes, unintentional malum.
Unintentional. It's like, whoops, I committed malum.
Yes. Sorry, it's oops, just, all malum.
It's just so weird.
Yes, it is weird. Anyway, check it out. Okay, if people would like to get a hold of us and tell us about their unintentional malums, how would they do so, Jason?
Okay, well, to tell us about your oopsie daisies, you can email us. It's podcast@limitedplaytime.com. You can go to the website, limitedplaytime.com. You can go to, what am I talking about? Twitter. You can go to Twitter, it's @limitedplaytime, or Instagram, @limitedplaytimepodcast.
All right, we will be back.
At some point.
Probably. In 2 weeks, maybe?
Ish.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. We don't really have a plan at this point. We've hit a wall on plans. I think next episode is 125, which is like, you know, that's a cool number. A lot of people celebrate that. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. Tune in 2 weeks and see.
We dare you.
Yes. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back probably in 2 or 3 weeks, and we will see you then.
Later.
Bye.